It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
All right, Sandy Rios with you this morning. That's the sounds in Iran last night, as at a university, and yesterday, as students were out asking for the ouster of the Khomeini and the mullahs, and refusing, saying, chanting, America is not our enemy. Our enemy is right here. I mean, it was a stunning display. Rick Leventhal had a great report on Fox and Friends this morning. Let's listen.
After days of denial, we saw a pretty dramatic series of developments over the weekend after the Iranian regime, as you mentioned, finally admitted shooting down that Ukrainian passenger plane. And when the people took to the streets to protest, the government responded with force. Police in riot gear using tear gas and live ammunition to break up demonstrations at Tehran University and Freedom Square and beyond, with reports of people wounded and pools of blood on the ground. It started peacefully, candlelight vigils for the 16 Iranian students and the 176 innocent civilians on board the doomed 737, but chants of death to the dictator and death to liars and calls for the Ayatollah to step down were met with this violent response from security forces. President Trump tweeting at Iran's leaders in Farsi and English, "Don't kill your protesters. Thousands have been killed or imprisoned so far, and the world is watching. More importantly, the United States is watching. Reconnect the internet and let reporters move freely. Stop killing the great people of Iran." The president did not say what he might do in response. Also yesterday, these remarkable images of many in the crowd avoiding stepping on American and Israeli flags on the street. Walking on the colors has been promoted by the Iranian regime since 1979. But yesterday, the people chanted, "The U.S. is not our enemy." U.S. officials say they are open to talks with Iranian leadership in hopes of finding a way forward. No word on when that might happen, guys.
All right, Rick Leventhal on Fox and Friends this morning. I mean, we are witnessing an absolute miracle and a sea change. It's really true. And the thing that, I guess I'd lead with this, the thing that concerns me, I do think we just, at least at this moment, have dodged an incredible conflict, which could have been very, very serious and painful for us as a country, and also caused more division. And the thing that worries me is that people are not paying attention and don't really realize it, just don't have the knowledge, the serious mind. We're so caught up in our own lives. I see that. I understand that. So I just want to challenge you to take this moment to get some perspective and realize how God really did spare us last week and bless the actions of President Trump when he killed Soleimani. When he ordered the killing of Soleimani a week ago. It's only been a week. Now let's talk about what happened. We know that a Ukrainian airliner was shot down, and we know that there were lots of students, Iranian students, on that airline. There were 176 people killed. 63 of them were Canadian, and some, of course, were Iranians and a lot of Ukrainians, of course. Now, this is the thing. Initially, Iran had said, you know, it was mechanical malfunctions. Then they said that, you know, they constantly were blaming other things. But the Ukrainians sent in people to kind of search, and they were looking mostly for Russian missiles to see, because they suspected that Initially, they were very gracious in their response, considering that so many of their people were killed in that crash, all of them. And so they were trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but they went in there to look. Meanwhile, I could tell you that Iran bulldozed the plane crash site even before investigators got there. Nevertheless, the Ukrainians found bits and pieces of Russian missiles. And so things began to change as the story began to unfold. And now the United States, you know, you may recall last week had said, the president had said, we think, you know, we're investigating this. We think it might be possible that Iran actually shot off this missile. So it turns out there's a video, actually, of the plane being shot. And you can see that it is in a blaze before it lands. It didn't crash on landing. It was already destroyed and trying to head back to the Tehran airport. So there's no question Iran had to finally come out and admit that it had actually done the shooting, shot down that plane. Just a knee-jerk reaction, nervous, thinking that America might attack them, although America has never attacked Iran directly. And they handled it very poorly. And they weren't going to take the credit for it. They were going to blame anything else. And by the way, they had a lot of help in blaming other things. President Trudeau of Canada had nothing to say when, 63 Canadians were shot down in that? He had nothing to say about Iran. Nothing bad to say about them at all. In fact, he was interviewed by a pro-Iranian journalist on CBC and asked if President Trump was to blame by provoking Iran. And Trudeau said, that's a question people will have to consider, says Trudeau. But of course, he's not alone. A Canadian broadcaster, CBC broadcaster, had this to say very clearly. Let's listen, clip five.
I think a significant question that Canadians, particularly the families of these victims, are going to have is, are 63 Canadians dead because of the unintended consequences of a decision made by the U.S. president? And that's going to be a big question because there have been very significant questions and concerns raised here in Washington about why the United States decided to act. Why did it decide to kill Iran's top general when it did? The United States top officials in the Trump administration have publicly said there was evidence that showed General Soleimani posed an imminent threat to American lives. However, lawmakers, particularly Democrats, have come forward to say the information they have been provided on a top secret basis does not satisfy the questions they have, does not answer the questions about, okay, what was that imminent threat? Why did you decide to do this? What exactly was at risk? Who was exposed? Why did the Trump administration decide to make this move now? Because, of course, the consequences many had feared in the United States and around the world, those consequences would be quite significant.
Katie Simpson of CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting, by the way. And, of course, it's, you know, President Trump is really responsible for this. And if she had help also, Susan Hennessy, who is a reporter with the New York Times, no, she's the national security analyst for CNN. And this is basically, she said, it was let me read her exact words. 176 people died that night, and now we know it's, at a minimum, related to crossfire. So in other words, it was the United States shooting missiles at Iran, and Iran shooting missiles back, and the plane was destroyed because of crossfire. Only, of course, that's absolutely absurd, and I want to read to you what someone put it very, very well, if I could find it. But basically, it's this. It's the closest thing America was shooting, I think, was like 1,500 miles away, the closest target they had tried to hit. It was no crossfire. It was ridiculous, an absolutely ridiculous claim. But so-called journalists are looking for any way possible to blame the Trump administration. And you heard Katie, that reporter for CBC, just now say, no, they claim there was an imminent threat, but no, there couldn't have been an imminent threat because Democrats did not hear it in the briefing. I want to play for you an interaction between President Trump and Laura Ingraham last week. He did a sit-down interview with her, and she asked him if they had evidence, why didn't he share it? This is clip 8.
Of them out, you know, that ended almost immediately. But Baghdad certainly would have been the lead, but I think it would have been four embassy, could have been military bases, could have been a lot of other things too. But it was imminent, and then all of a sudden, he was gone.
Why is Nancy Pelosi describing her briefing as dismissive and disdainful? Mike Lee said it was insulting, the Intel briefing. What wasn't said to mollify the concerns of some of your strongest supporters, like Mike Lee?
Yeah, he is a great supporter. He's a friend of mine. He called me just a little while ago, and he said, you know, I just wanted to get some more information. And he was, look, I've also had calls from some of the senators, some of the congressmen, said it was the single best briefing. One person said they've been there for 10 years. It's the single best briefing they've ever had. One said 20 years, the single best military briefing they've ever had. I understand what Mike had. Mike wanted certain things said, and we just couldn't say them. We could probably say maybe individually to him, and he's certainly a trustworthy person.
Are you worried that the Democrats can't be trusted with classified information? Because that's kind of what it sounded like when Pence gave that interview and talked about sources and methods the other day.
I am worried about it, certainly. I am worried about it. Can you imagine? Here we are, split-second timing, executed like nobody's seen in many, many years on Soleimani. Can you imagine they want us to call up and speak to crooked, corrupt politician Adam Schiff? Oh, Adam, we have somebody that we've been trying to get for a long time. We have a shot at him right now. Could we meet so that we can get your approval, Adam Schiff? And he'd say, well, let's do it in a couple of days. Oh, okay, let's meet in a couple. It doesn't work that way. Number one. Number two, they leak. Anything we give will be leaked immediately. You'll see breaking news. We're about to attack in 25 minutes or do something. And by the way, I'm not somebody that wants to attack. I probably could have attacked 5 times, 10 times.
Yeah, okay. So that was part of that interview. And then I also, you know, they just are not letting up, the left. Journalistic left, journalists, they're not worthy of that name. The propaganda news media. In fact, I want you to hear, if we can hear it, if we have time for it, I want you to hear Mark Esper talking to Jake Tapper on State of the Union. And this is how Jake treated the information. Let's clip 9.
No one is disputing that Soleimani posed an existential threat to innocent people. But the president came out and said that he believed there was a threat to 4 embassies. Were those 4 embassies alerted that there was a threat to them?
All the embassies were alerted. That's why I deployed additional troops to the region. And let me say this much, Jake. I'm glad we're having this discussion today, because I'd rather be here discussing this topic with you than going up to Dover Air Force Base and standing there while flag-draped coffins come home. And I have to explain to husbands and wives, sons and daughters, why their service member died when I had information that could have prevented that from happening.
But I guess the point is, what information?
Information that he was orchestrating an attack.
But you're orchestrating something, but you don't know what it was.
Orchestrating an attack, likely which would include an attack on the United States Embassy.
In Baghdad.
It was going to occur.
But did the Baghdad Embassy know that there was a threat to them?
Absolutely, because of course they were already under siege by Soleimani.
But a new threat, a different threat.
The embassy was constantly watching the attacks, the threat streams coming at them, our commanders on the ground. I deployed hundreds of additional soldiers. We had Apache helicopters in the air to deter the attacks and prepare to defend. We had armed drones in the air to do that. Our goal is to protect the American people.
Sure, but many members of Congress from both parties have said that none of the briefings mentioned threats to 4 U.S. embassies. Why is President Trump telling this to Fox News, but the administration is not briefing Congress on this threat of 4 embassies, unless there was actually no specific intelligence that there was a threat to 4 embassies?
The president never said there was specific intelligence.
Yeah, okay. So that's a Jake Tapper drilling the National Security Advisor, Mark Esper. You notice that when Mark Esper said, look, I would rather be here with you than out greeting bodies coming into Dover Air Force Base, Jake was nonplussed. He didn't care about that. Very concerned that Soleimani had been killed, but not so concerned about the potential death of so many American soldiers. Not concerned about that at all, and really concerned that Fox should get this scoop about there being 4 embassies ahead of CNN. It's just so twisted and upside down. The truth is, the Iranians have admitted that they shot the airliner down. The Iranian people are furious. They're marching in the streets. Last night, now the Iranian people, mullahs, have turned their guns on the Iranian people. This is really a serious situation for Iran, but I think America, for the moment, has dodged a bullet, and President Trump absolutely made the right decision. I'll be right back after this.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance. And it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. And over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Such comfort. And yet, can you imagine having never read those words for yourself? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, and we've been engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years for $5 a Bible. You know, there are Christians in Asia, Africa, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East who've never held a Bible in their own hands because of corrupt governments that oppress, majority religions that persecute, and other conditions related to living remotely and in extreme poverty. Some of these new believers, they memorize long stretches of Scripture, while others cherish the Word they heard preached on Sunday until they can gather again. They long for God's Word to hold in their hands and to cherish in their hearts as they grow in His grace and knowledge. Details on how you can be involved are at sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. A USA Today editorial condemned law-abiding gun owners who rushed to stop a madman inside the West Freeway Church of Christ. Elvia Diaz praised Jack Phillips, the church deacon who shot and killed the attacker, but she said she was very alarmed that many of the other church members were also armed. She said it was unfortunate. Unfortunate? The reality is that a good man with a gun stopped a bad man with a gun, period. Ms. Diaz said it was terrifying that we know nothing about those other law-abiding gun owners. Terrifying? Well, why is it terrifying that a group of responsible, law-abiding Christians stood up to an evil man inside their church? The greater concern is electing lawmakers like former Vice President Joe Biden, who want to disarm law-abiding Americans. Had Biden been in charge, no one in that church would have been armed except the attacker. Be sure to download my new podcast, available right now at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm saying that the American government, the American president, made a serious miscalculation. They made a serious mistake by assassinating, by taking this terrorist action against Commander Soleimani. And I'm sure that they regret what they've done.
You said at the press conference the other day, you said yourself, that if there was an attack on this embassy, that you would destroy the hostages. Could you really do that?
Yes, we mean it.
Could you personally lift up a gun,
yes,
put it to the head of one of these people and kill him?
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was Christiana Amanpour interviewing a woman named Masuma Eptekar, who was the spokesperson for the Iranian students who took over the American embassy in Tehran in 1979 and held the hostages for over 400 days. 52 hostages, horrendous. We've talked about it a lot since this whole current crisis with Iran. And the first part of it was her statement about how the president made a mistake taking out Soleimani. The second clip was her as a student back in 1979 saying absolutely yes, she would personally kill the people inside that embassy. And so that's the kind of person that the press is choosing to interview in regard, the American press, in regard to what's happening with Iran. I've asked Tony Schaefer to join us this morning. Tony is a friend. I consider him a friend. It's been a long time since he's joined us. He was a lieutenant in the U.S. Army Reserves for a long time and was very active during the Iraq War. He wrote a book called Operation Dark Heart that did very, very well. We talked to him about that a number of years ago, but he's currently the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and he's all over what's happening in Iran this morning. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy, and thank you. And one correction, I'm a colonel, not a lieutenant. So,
that's a good correction. Thank you. We're going to update your bio. Tony, we've already talked before you joined us here. We've talked quite a bit already about Iran this morning. And I have reported that there are, riots is not true, demonstrations on the street, and that now the mullahs are beginning to shoot back at the protesters. What do you know about that?
So there's been a popular uprising, and I encourage all of you to follow Ambassador Rick Grenell's Twitter feed if you don't, because Rick, as our ambassador to Germany, is very close to the situation there, and he hyper-monitors what's going on. So the other thing about Rick is he's very, he's very modern. He actually communicates constantly about what's going on there. So I often look at his feed to see what's going on. And the truth is, the very people who we've been told are upset with President Trump's decision to eliminate Soleimani are the ones now protesting their government and their government's downing of this Ukrainian airliner. And they're fed up. And I think there's much more evidence that this is completely spontaneous and very dangerous for those people than the so-called Soleimani funeral protests, which happened a few days ago. And I think this is what we need to be paying attention to, is the fact that there is a large number of their millennials who are fed up with being essentially suppressed, having to live within a theocracy which limits free thought, free expression. And, oh, by the way, homosexuals and things like that are, put to death there. People are stoned to death. This is truly the 10th century. So I think these people have the right to rise up and protest, and we should encourage them.
Tony, you know, it's kind of amazing that we've talked about Hong Kong a lot here, and I'm sure it's been part of your thoughts, too, in writing about the protesters there, and they certainly have shown such bravery and courage. But in Tehran, I think about, the reports are that 1,500 protesters have been killed in the last year or two, the killings led by Soleimani. So when these young people at this university last night, in the last 24 hours, went out to protest, this is even more dangerous because they know that it could turn deadly, which is what it did last night. So that's what makes you think that there are a lot more people besides the ones we saw who are actually not fans of Soleimani or the mullahs.
Well, that's correct. And I think this is where we've missed a real opportunity in multiple administrations, especially in the Obama administration. There's something called the Green Movement back in 2009, which was an uprising that, as you might recall, during that period, there was the Arab Spring, where we were encouraging those to rise up against some countries, which, by the way, were very friendly to us. We actually helped destabilize our government. You might recall Egypt and Libya both. In the case of Iran, where there was a organic movement to rise up, we didn't support it. We should have called for a Persian Spring. And, oh, by the way, the Iranians have been trying to find a way to obtain a nuclear weapon. The quickest way to prevent them from gaining a nuclear weapon is by their own people rising up against their government and stopping it. It's very clear. But instead, what we saw was the Obama administration embrace, support, and dare I say, enrich the mullahs to include Soleimani. I'm one of those who's calling right now for an internal investigation to find out what, if any, direct correspondence happened between Ben Rhodes and his other national security advisors at the White House, that is Obama and Soleimani. I want to know if there was direct links between those people, and I'll bet we'll find that there were.
You know, I was just reading an article this morning about the many times, I think it was four times, that Barack Obama sent private letters to, I think it was Soleimani or Khomeini, or maybe both of them. And yeah, so he was dealing behind the scenes with them. We know that, and we're sure that Ben Rhodes was up to his ears in that. So you also there are also some reports that that Ben Rhodes is coordinating messaging with reporters. What do you know about that?
So we do know, and this is obvious. I mean, if you look at just the messaging, there was an interview this weekend with John Kerry, where he actually tells in an interview, I think it was with this week, one of the Sunday morning political talk shows, saying, oh, you need to ignore President Trump's lies. There's no lies. President Trump has said flat out that that the Obama administration paid $150 billion to Iran. And Kerry, years ago when this happened, actually admitted that some of that money would go to terrorism. Well, it has. And now they're pretending nothing to see here, don't listen to the president in the White House because he's lying. He's not lying. Kerry, Ben Rhodes, Joe Biden, they're all behind the scenes attempting to essentially protect the legacy of Obama.
Actually, Tony, we've got that John Kerry clip in January 2016 in Davos admitting that big pot of money, some of it's going to go to the IRGC, which has been designated as a terrorist group by the United States. Let's listen. It's clip 12.
I think that some of it will end up in the hands of the IRGC or of other entities, some of which are labeled terrorist. Right now, we are not seeing the early delivery of funds going to that kind of endeavor at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure at some point some of it will.
All right, so Tony, you've gone public, I think it was with Daily Caller, about a particular reporter. Now, I've mentioned several already this morning before you joined me who are reporting, you know, talking about the shooting down of the Ukrainian airport as crossfire, as though it was some sort of an altercation between the Iranians and the Americans, which was completely false. That's just one example.
Right.
But you had some really strong words for Farnaz Fasihi, who was the New York Times journalist. What's the story there?
Well, this is where I've been monitoring what they say for purposes of trying to understand who is essentially mainlining the IRGC propaganda. And I encourage your audience to go look for themselves. Some of this information, like you just point out, is completely without merit regarding factuality. As a matter of fact, it's ironic the night of the Iranian attack on Iraq, when the airliner was shot down, we weren't doing anything. We weren't planning anything. We knew it would be essentially a feckless attempt to do something, and there was no response planned at all. And so there was no crossfire. It was the Iranians behaving like the Iranians do. The theocracy is bloodthirsty, and they shot down the airliner because they wanted to. You have members of the New York Times who essentially have become conduits, spokesmen for the IRGC. The IRGC, as Kerry tried to kind of step aside and not address directly, is a terrorist organization. I wrote an editorial last week on Real Clear Politics where I talk about the fact that in Afghanistan in 2003, while I was running operations there, an FBI agent and I had to essentially break the interrogation an IRGC enabler who was trying to fund terrorist acts against us in 2003 in Afghanistan. So these people have a long history of doing completely evil things. And so that's what we need to be vigilant of, is anybody who reports on these activities, especially the New York Times, are essentially, and MSNBC, by the way, MSNBC was taking information during the night of the attack and basically putting it out, putting Iranian propaganda out as fact. So we know that there is elements of the U.S. media who are completely compromised to the Iranian IRGC.
You know, I just played, again, before you joined me, the interaction between Mark Esper and Jake Tapper over the weekend, where Tapper just attacks him, really, about, you know, well, how do you know there were four embassies? Why didn't you tell us? Well, why? None of the Democrats heard that. Why, you know, how do we know? You're not making this up, whatever. It was very hostile back and forth. So, Tony, the president has made a good defense, and Mark Esper really answered his questions, but it didn't seem to satisfy Jake. What do you know about what the intelligence was in regard to an imminent attack?
I've explained several times, look, there are levels of intelligence knowledgeability that members of Congress and others will not just, even Esper may not have full details, and here's why. This operation, the operation to eliminate Soleimani, and much of what we're doing in the Middle East is DOD-based, Pentagon-based. We do a lot of things. As a matter of fact, for those who read my book, Operation Darkheart, we talk a little bit about in Chapter 2 some of the things we do as best we can without getting into detail. A lot of things we do essentially are set up for purposes of war fighting. We prepare the battlefield to win. And some of those operations are not designed to do intelligence collection, but they do develop intelligence, if that makes sense. So when we develop that intelligence, we have to find a way to get it out to people, to let people know what's going on without compromising the fact we have a capability. And I think that's what happened here. We have, from talking to several generals who worked for McChrystal during the last few years and some of the other folks I deal with, we've developed some very significant, better than CIA, I might add, intelligence collection operations in that region. And so it's not surprising that the specific details are not available to even the Secretary of Defense. Some operations really are maintained as need to know. And simply suffice to say that, hey, they'll be briefed on the basic ideas of what came out of the operation without getting into details of how we got it. And I think that's necessary today, especially with people like Ilhan Omar and others who would very likely compromise any details of any intelligence operation because they've said they will, quote-unquote, stop the president.
Yes, I know. It's just, it's mind-boggling. And I'll tell you what else is mind-boggling to me. Honestly, Tony, I did not expect the Iranian government to come out and confess that they had shot down that Ukrainian airline. Wasn't that an incredible development?
I think it was they had no choice. Basically, over the week between the time it happened and our announcement, we had developed significant evidence via multiple collection systems and had it available. And I think there was going to be no way once Mike Pompeo announced the details of what we'd learned that they could deny that. And so I think rather than face a constant back and forth, which inevitably they would lose, I think they owned up to it, which, by the way, it doesn't help them. I mean, it simply reflects on how bloodthirsty they are. This was an aircraft flying out of a civilian airport on a common civilian path, and they shot it down. And think about this for a second. These people want nuclear weapons. Can you imagine the excuse mm-hmm. they're going to make to say, oh, we didn't really mean to release that nuclear weapon and bomb mm-hmm. Tel Aviv. It was an accident. This is how hideous these people are. They're bloodthirsty. They have no regard for human life. And I'm sorry, the left is completely wrong about this. I cannot believe that Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats are mourning the loss of a man who has blood on his hands and has been working to undermine the United States since 1979. It's quite amazing.
Tony, that point about them handling nuclear weapons and the way they did this missile is chilling and honestly had not occurred to me. That's just that requires a minute to think. But we don't have a minute to think, just think. But I want to ask you in closing here.
Sure.
It's just been a week since the president authorized the killing of Soleimani. Tell us, give us the broad picture, the big picture. What does this mean to the world and to us?
So there is a campaign. One of the other things I've been doing in my interviews is pointing out the fact, and I know this for a fact, that there is a campaign ongoing. This was not a random act. This was not spur of the moment as tried to be portrayed by the press. The president has an effective team. General Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, stepped down, but had already started the plan. General Mark Milley, the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs, has picked it up. Mark Esper is a good Secretary of Defense. He's letting the military do its job. I think President has put together an effective team who will reestablish our ability to defend our interests without being essentially an imperial power. President Trump does not want to start new wars. He wants to be able to defend the American people and what we need to have done, and that's what he's focused on.
Yeah, and in this short week, I think we are watching Iran really implode. I mean, it's very possible that Iran is going to implode by the increase in sanctions and the people still willing to lay their lives down to protest the mullahs. I mean, it really is an amazing development. We could be at war, but look at where we are, Tony. It's just amazing. I thank God for President Trump and his willingness to take such huge risks and such huge hits to himself personally. Tony Schaefer, London Center, author of Operation Darkheart. Tony, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you, Sandy.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The first to plead his case seems right until another comes and examines him. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The experts and the talking snakes have been wrong about President Trump since 2016. The so-called experts said the president's trade war with China would destroy our economy. They said moving our embassy to Jerusalem would spark unrest. They said moving troops in Syria would result in genocide. They said striking Soleimani would lead us to war. There's a pattern here, folks. Regressive opposition to President Trump has nothing to do with principle. The globalist cabal despises anything resembling an America First agenda. But President Trump is doing exactly what the voters elected him to do.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Are you prepared to answer your kids' tough questions about faith and God and the Bible? On the next Focus on the Family, apologist Natasha Crane outlines four of the most important questions you need to discuss with your children, like why did Jesus have to die on the cross? That's next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Paul and Silas went through Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. They attempted to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. This must have been extremely puzzling to Paul and Silas. They wanted to do a good thing, preach the word in what is now Turkey, but Jesus would not permit them to do it. He shut the door right in their faces. But then Paul received a vision in the night, a man of Macedonia calling him to come to Philippi, and suddenly they understood. They had in mind preaching the gospel to new cities. God said, "I want you to preach my word in a whole new continent." And so the gospel went to Europe for the first time. God often directs our path by closing doors in one direction, only to open them in another. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Saturday, freedom was powerfully affirmed by Taiwan's electorate in a stunning rebuke to communist China and the mainland's efforts to impose its will on the island, as it has tried to do in Hong Kong. Voters gave a 20-point margin of victory to their incumbent president, Tsai Ing-wen, and a strong mandate to defend Taiwan's sovereignty. In response, the Chinese Communist Party is insisting that reunification is inevitable, whether the Taiwanese want it or not. The not-so-subtle implication is that force will be used to seize the island, and Beijing is increasingly equipped with ballistic missiles, amphibious ships, sea lift, and a fleet of some 3,000 passenger aircraft that can enable a no-notice invasion. Now that Taiwan's voters have courageously repudiated the PRC, the United States must find new ways of deterring Chinese threats to their freedoms and ours. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Changed our world. I wonder what God wanted you.
to do. Were you a boy or a girl? Oh,
oh, oh. All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's a song called What Was Your Name? And of course, it's a song that's relevant for this time of year because January of this year is the annual March for Life in Washington, D.C., where we remember the passage of Roe versus Wade in 1973 and remember it, you know, dreadfully because so many kids have been killed. Over 860,000 abortions are still performed in the United States annually. Isn't that something? I mean, that's just a tragedy, and that's what we are here to remember today. And before I introduce my guest, let me just say that AFA always and every year partners with Preborn. Preborn is a ministry that works with crisis pregnancy centers around the country and provides ultrasound testing and machines for these pregnancy centers so that women can actually see their babies in utero. And we find that 80% of women who are actually able to see their babies change their minds. And that's why Preborn is a powerful and important ministry. And let me tell you right up front that we are asking you to help us. If you can give us $28, that's just $28, one woman seeking an abortion will get a free ultrasound. $28 for one woman. And so, of course, you can divide it however you want or multiply it. $140 would buy five free ultrasound sessions for five women. So you can go on depending on what you can afford. Our phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can go online and donate at afr.net, afr.net. Now, the voice on the other side of that song, What Was Your Name, was the voice of Joyce M. Bartholomew. Joyce is a Christian from the Los Angeles area. And she's been singing and on stage since she was young. She's she's the product of South Korean immigrants, which is close to my heart since I spent some time in North Korea. Well, not much time, but I was the chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. So that part of the world is very interesting to me. She was very heavily influenced by Hollywood. She studied in Chicago, my hometown, and she met and married her husband. She has been performing on the stage with Christian messages. She has all kinds of she's a YouTube artist also. She's had 8 million views for her hits like What Was Your Name, which we just played, and Fight for Your Marriage. Those are great themes. And so let me, just without further ado, introduce to you to Joyce M. Bartholomew. Joyce, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Sandy, for having me. That's such a blessing.
Yeah, well, a blessing to us too, Kim. You're going to be singing at the National Prayer Service at the March for Life in D.C. coming up, right?
Yes, it'll be my third year in a row doing it, and that's a huge honor.
Yeah, it is, and I it's a great event. I've been there so many years. I don't think I can go this year, but it's usually the place that I hang out on that day in January. But Joyce, I'm curious. You know, as Christians, there are so many things that we can get involved in because there's so many issues. I talk about them, you know, constantly. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, the crisis we see in the globe or the economy or it's whatever. There are a lot of things you can get involved in. So why this Preborn for you? Why the link with you and Preborn?
Well, I was a pregnancy care center counselor many years ago. I volunteered doing that. And that's where my heart for this ministry stems from. And I was counseling them for years, these girls and sometimes women who are even older than me, just loving them, helping them through their pregnancy, helping to change their minds, leading some to Christ, which was one of the most incredible moments in my life, seeing some of them get married and helping them with their babies and seeing their babies even grow up. So really, it's a compassion ministry that Preborn is, but this is why I've had this heart, and God has brought me here, not because I was seeking it, but because this is what He wanted. This is my calling. This is truly my calling.
Joyce, you know, a lot of the criticism by the left or the pro-abortion side is that people who are pro-life, Christians who are pro-life, don't do anything to help the babies. They just, you know, have this impossible standard to keep, and then they do nothing on behalf of the babies. Would you please just reiterate for us what exactly these crisis pregnancy centers and Preborn in conjunction with them actually does for these moms and even their partners or the fathers of the babies?
Yes, they are absolutely wrong to say that, because after the mother has the baby, the counselors, if the mother wants, still is involved and receiving free maternity items, free baby items, even like large items like cribs, if they have them donated, diapers, food, still like Bible study, if they wish to have, and they bring their daughter or son, their family's welcome. They are involved in their baby's life often as long as the mother of the child wants it. It's very, very loving and compassionate. And when they say that, it's just a way to lie about what really goes on.
Yeah. Joyce, let me just pause to say that one, the particular thing we're talking about, we want to talk about this morning, is the effect of ultrasound on these women who are pregnant, and it's an ill-timed, unexpected crisis in their lives. And so these ultrasounds play a key role in women deciding actually to keep their babies. And I want to say to you, all of you listening, it's only $28 if you help one woman, one girl, who whatever the age, get an ultrasound. $28 for one woman. So if you have the ability to give this morning in any amount, you know, multiply that times 10. Whatever you feel that you can do this morning, if you feel that you want to help, that God has kind of pricked your conscience this morning as a result of our discussion, our phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or donate online at AFR.net. That's AFR.net. Now, Joyce, I remember a time when ultrasound wasn't as advanced as it is now, and crisis pregnancies, many of them didn't, you know, machines were expensive. And I don't know if you counseled during that time, but were you counseling when ultrasounds came in? And kind of tell us personally what a difference you've seen that make in counseling girls.
When I was counseling, they weren't as available. They were more expensive. They didn't have options where they were refurbished and it can last 10 years for like $15,000 to $20,000. They were much more. Now, and then when I have gone, I'm still involved in the clinics and I talk to the people. And so I have talked to the ladies who have said it has completely changed my mind, like from 40% of the time without the ultrasound machine, hearing and their baby or seeing, hearing the heartbeat and seeing the baby on the scan, or to 80% of the time they will choose life. It doubles it. And they have said, what the cutest things like, I cannot kill my baby. This little chili pepper, this little bean I'm seeing, you know, they say always they cry a lot of times because they were bent on abortion because they're pressured by their mother 48% of the time, their boyfriend 42% of the time. And they themselves don't want to do it. They just feel they don't have a choice. And then they'll say, I cannot kill my baby. I cannot kill my baby. And we step in to help them, support them through this whole process. And it's not about just leaving them high and dry. And it's incredible, this emotional and spiritual connection they have to their baby, the mother to their child. It will change that moment. It changes everything. And then we focus on leading these women to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. It's one of our hugest focus center. This is what we really, really focus on. We have evangelism training for the volunteers called The Invitation that's been very successful. And if we know that if they can receive Christ, that they can impact their baby, their family, the future spouse or boyfriend currently, and it will change everything, changes our culture. So it just starts with the ultrasound where they say, I cannot kill my baby. That is very common thing.
Joyce, that one of the powerful arguments in favor of abortion when this was raging early on, like in the 70s and 80s, was that, you know, that's just a blob of tissue. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
It's just a few cells strung together. It's a blob. It doesn't have form or function. And that is why, one of the reasons why the ultrasound has been such a valuable tool. It has silenced the lying pro-abortion forces on the other side on that issue. It is not just a blob of tissue. Mm-hmm. And when moms see it, as you described, it changes their lives. By the way, if you would like to help make it possible for women today, as we're talking this morning, who I've just realized that they're pregnant, many of them panicking, many of them really, nobody really loves abortion. I would say that. I can't think of anyone who would say, oh, gee, I'm pregnant, I'm just going to make an appointment, no big deal. It is always a big deal.
Yes.
It's always traumatic for women. And so you've got women facing that this morning, and if you would like to help them get an ultrasound so that a crisis pregnancy center near you can help them and counsel them and help them to kind of accept this reality and let God really work through it in a powerful way as only He can do. Our phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or donate online at AFR.net. You know, when you do what you've been doing, Joyce, mm-hmm. for so many years, counseling, mm-hmm. there's usually one or two stories that stand out, mm-hmm. one or two women who's the story that you always go back to. And I'm just wondering, what's that one interaction with a woman that really, really gripped you?
You talking personally or stories
yes.
that I've heard from clients?
Personally? No, I mean personally, when you were counseling.
Sure. I remember that this teenager and her boyfriend coming in saying, "You're so young, you know, we should have an abortion." And she's never had a baby or anything. And I'm just pleading with her to reconsider that this is a child, and if she would not make this mistake that she's going to regret for the rest of her life. And they're very scared and immature, and they don't know what else to do. And I'm saying that we can help you. We can provide all these things for you. And Jesus loves you. And Jesus loves your baby. And the worst part was when she said something to a social worker, because she had postpartum depression, after she had her baby. And I was there. I was invited to the birthing of her baby. And I was asked to be a godmother of her child as well, which is, I couldn't even believe it. But they took the baby from her her arms when she was breastfeeding, because she said she had postpartum depression. It was the state, I believe, the social workers. And she asked me to help her. So my husband and I then went out to fight for her with the cheapest lawyer we could find, who had a big heart. And we were able to get her child back from foster care, because mm-hmm. her child was forever going to be taken from her. This is the level of work a lot of these counselors do. I mean, I just mm-hmm. did. I had a passion for this, but so do a lot of other people. They go above and beyond in serving these women and their families. And ultimately, those two people got married, and her child is a teenager, possibly going to college, I think.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. And just to have her baby back. But she almost never had that. And she didn't have anybody else to turn to but the pregnancy centers.
Well, and also the details look from an objective viewpoint and the world's viewpoint. They're too young. She should get
yes.
an abortion. She's got her whole life ahead of her. So does he.
Yes.
And look what God does. It's just pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It is pretty amazing.
It is.
Joyce. So let's give the phone number again. It's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online at AFR.net, and that's to pay for ultrasounds for women who are seeking an abortion. In just the minute that we have left, I'd be curious to know, Joyce, what you know about the March for Life in Washington, D.C. this year and the Day of Prayer, because people might want to go. Do you know much about it right offhand?
Well, yes, January 24, it's in D.C., and then the National Prayer Service starts about 8 a.m., 8:30 a.m. in the Constitution Hall in D.C., and I'll be singing there, leading also worship, the hymns. And then they have the entire rally from 11 a.m. onward, and they end it with the testimonies at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the women that have had regret their abortions, right?
Yes, they call it Silent No More.
Yes, I've been there many, many
yes.
times. It's worth the trouble to get to Washington, D.C. to go be
yes.
part of that event. So, all right, the phone number is 877-616-2396, or to go to AFR.net. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can donate today. And Joyce M. Bartholomew, it's been a pleasure. We wish you all the best, and I know that
Thank you.
In D.C. are going to be in good hands with you leading worship. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.